Good evening, Two Dope Nation.
How y'all doing?
We are here with a surprise episode on a Sunday evening. How you doing,
I'm
man?
Doing good. We had a virtual birthday party for Takari today that went off.
How did that go?
It went off fairly well. I think the grandparents were a little, you know, put off by it, but the kids loved it. They played Minecraft through Zoom most of the afternoon in the world that Takari and his friends had built for his birthday. So overall, he had fun.
I feel like your son mostly exists in worlds that he has built, and I kind of admire that.
Yeah, he was having fun. They had a good time.
That's cool. That's great. So we are here this evening because we have a little bit of bandwidth left to use for the month of March, and we're trying to be efficient. Yeah. Is that right?
Efficiency.
So for our new listeners, we are Two Dope Teachers and a Mic. I'm Hidard the Munoz.
It's your boy, Kevin Adams.
And we are merely two public school teachers on quarantine in the great city of Denver, the Queen City of the West.
Becoming experts.
Yeah, did you know that?
Yes, becoming experts on social distancing.
We are attempting to become experts on social distancing and remote learning and all those things. If you'd like to reach us, get at us through social media. You can find us at Instagram and Twitter at Two Dope Teachers. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Two Dope Teachers and a Mic. And if you're really old school, shoot us an email, twodopeteachers@gmail.com. We're here because over the last few days, a lot of you who are our listeners, as well as folks from bigger media outlets, have you heard of National Public Radio?
I've heard of them. I think Trump doesn't like them.
Yeah, I'm kind of familiar with them a little bit. They've been raising some interesting some interesting questions around equity in this remote and digital age that has been foisted upon us in the last 3 weeks. So we're going to talk a little bit about equity as it relates to remote learning, and especially within the context that we don't know how long this is going to go.
Especially since the president announced that he's going to keep extending the quarantine regulations or the social distancing regulations through April. So
also, we'll all be back to work by Easter.
Yeah, that's not happening. Even he's figuring that it's going to be pushed back a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. So that's the interesting thing, right? And I think what we're seeing on display is a lot of the uncertainty that a lot of folks are feeling. Now, a lot of us are not verbalizing it at a White House press conference, but there is a lot of uncertainty as to how this is going to play out. So we're going to talk about what we view as some of the largest equity issues that face us as we embark on this journey called online remote learning. Kev, I'll kind of put it to you first, man. What do you kind of view as the equity question regarding online learning? Where is your mind at right now?
I mean, first of all, I mean, as a person who's done remote learning, you know, for my master's degree, I would say that I'm really worried, I think, about just overall access, right? Because it takes a fair amount of, you know, I think knowledge to navigate an online course and use the resources in a way that would be effective to you. I don't think a lot of teachers might necessarily know how to, you know, navigate and conduct online learning effectively. You know, and I'm talking about simple things like kids learning to pause the videos that they're watching on their own, right? So people are saying, well, you're going to put a video on. Well, I can put a video on, but there might not be always complex learning that might happen. So I think teachers learning to use tools like Edpuzzle to put questions in the videos, to be really preemptive, because it's really about good planning for effective online learning is one part. But I also worry about access in a sense of, like you said, before we went on air, that there's just not even enough internet equitably around our country, you know? And while kids maybe in Denver might have a little greater access to internet. I wonder about our kids in rural Colorado and what's happening to them. You know, what happens to the kids in places like West Virginia or Tennessee, like you mentioned before, you know, where there hasn't been a big effort to put a lot of public services like the internet and extend those services to everybody, you know, in a democratic manner.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And, you know, the more so I always feel weird in these kind of pivotal situations, because I feel like there's always a big rush to make something happen, right? Like we all get on board, we all decide we're going to do a thing. We don't have a lot of like time or opportunity to research said thing, and we plunge ahead. And there's not always a question of like, should we be doing this? Because I think about from my own kind of perspective, and I think your question about access, I think is absolutely critical. I don't think there's a more important like question to be asking as we embark into this world of remote learning. And I think it's honestly, I think it's the only question. Like, you know, we know that for the most part, this remote learning experience is going to be defined by who can get access to the resources and who can't. And so I was thinking about, so for the last week, I've been doing these kind of web chats and then online work with my AP students. I have 45 AP students, 13 have engaged. And that's kind of, okay, so like, I can say, well, you know what, it's also like one of my students who had engaged pointed out, well, it's technically spring break. So maybe people are not in the mindset of like doing the work. They don't think it's that serious and that kind of thing. But like 13 out of 45, I believe is less than 25%. And I feel like if I had 25% engagement in my classroom, I would be out of a job, man. Like, especially if you were my evaluator, Tom Plan. But I mean, there is that very serious thing where just on an anecdotal level, you know, how much engagement is there? I want to turn folks' attention to, so if you're really interested in learning more about this, highly recommend that you follow NPR's coverage of the coronavirus. One of the things that they posted on March 26th of this year was the biggest distance learning experience in history, week one. And a lot of what I've kind of experienced is kind of bearing out through this story. So they quote a Brookings Institution researcher named Douglas Harris, who basically has called for school districts to just not teach remotely. Don't do it. It's not worth it. It actually does more harm than good. It would be better off if we just focused on making up time. So some of what he quotes is, and this is a direct quote from his research, studies of online learning suggest that not only students learn less in online environments compared with in person, but that disadvantaged students learn the least. And that's true even when online teachers have experience and training with online teaching. Under the current emergency, most teachers will not have any experience at all with this approach. So that was a piece that kind of like, and I'm pretty tech savvy, man. Like I taught myself Google Classroom. I taught myself how to upload a podcast, right? So like, so I'm pretty tech savvy and this is still pretty daunting. So I'm starting to ask the question, man, should we even be doing this? Why not just do summer school? You know?
Well, I think it's because it's all like part of a system and an institution, you know? Like, there's a plan out, like, how do we make sure we get the minutes, right? What is the Colorado Department of Education going to tell Denver Public Schools? And what is the Federal Department of Education going to tell the Colorado Department of Education about what you have to do to make sure education happens? And what happens if the kids aren't tested 1 year, you know? I mean, it's a whole system that they're like, it has to keep moving. And the most effective way is to continue it. But you know, I think they act like it's, I think it's a real challenge, you know, to just say, okay, well, what is going on? All these kids are doing school online, and it's all over. There's no consistency at all from school to school, from classroom to classroom. There's no consistency in the learning experiments, you know, and there's nobody there to kind of.
I mean, and that's a huge point, right? Like, that's a huge point that we're seeing. So we put this question out on Twitter. What if this question doesn't, what if this approach doesn't work? And people kind of got on in their feelings. But a couple of things stood out in the Twitter chat. The first was, and I don't remember the person's name, but a person teaching out in Irvine basically said, oh yeah, everyone in our district is going to get access to Google Fiber. And Google Fiber is just like next level, like high speed internet, right? And then someone else tweets at us saying, yo, out here in Tennessee, you know, a huge percentage of our kids can't even get internet. They can afford it, but they don't have access to it because of where they live, which begs a question as to how rural populations will be getting this too. And then when you think about, you know, and I don't know, most of the calls and most of the emails I've fielded for my students have to do with, I can't get internet. I can get this free internet for like an hour a day in ways that it's just not sustainable. Here's another stat that comes from the same NPR story. Just over half of the nation's public school children are from families that are considered to be low income, and an estimated 12 million lack broadband internet access at home. It just feels like, to your point, that aside from keeping the system moving, there isn't a strong rationale to keep doing this, especially if it can be so damaging.
Well, you know, like, I don't think they're – look, man, if they were worried about damaging kids, they'd change the policies, right? I don't think that's their concern. They're not concerned about right. what's damaging kids.
No, that's absolutely right.
And you know what? The only kids in school districts and schools that will be harmed by this are going to be schools that are predominantly students of color and predominantly free and reduced lunch students. Because anybody who understands what the situation is will see that those kids are dealing with a lot more than this. But I mean, I go back to like the teachers aren't even prepared for this. And it even like some of the conversations that I hear and the things that the teachers are worried about, they don't understand the realities of what they're about to go in. Do you think you had attendance problems before? You know,
and I
get that reaching out and calling, having a schedule and reminding, I mean, I think we want kids to access it how they can, you know, but
well, and you know what? And to that point that you just made about like reaching out and making calls home and sending the emails, there's this, one of my wife's coworkers posted an opinion piece on Colorado School Talk. If you want to check it out, coschooltalk.org. She makes a point in one of these where she says that, let's see, where is it? Okay, I don't want to waste too much. Okay, here he goes. My students' parents will lose the only connection I have to them, their phone numbers. So what happens is that when you're teaching in a district that is high poverty, high free and reduced lunch, if you're teaching in a school that's high poverty and high free and reduced lunch, what you're going to notice is, man, how many times have you gone to call a kid and the number is disconnected? The number is no longer in service. You get somebody else who has no idea why you're calling.
I think this goes to the point, too, about like, well, how are we going about making sure that people keep their services on? Right. You're not even addressing that. You're worried so much about having remote learning and keeping this system going. In a way that somehow makes you feel like you're doing something that's really important that I didn't hear people clamoring for. I didn't hear them demanding, we want to make sure we have something, right? Maybe certain parents were, but I don't know if that was everybody. But again, I think that it's important for all kids to have access. I think it's important for all kids to learn. But again, how we go about doing it, how we penalize families and children who aren't able to participate. But I want to go back to something like that just, I think, highlights all of where people's mindsets are completely wrong. And I think it give maybe my idea for like what maybe an effective remote learning environment could possibly look like, you know, considering all the access issues, right? And the challenges to getting access. But you shared that post the meme about the Zoom class rules, basic etiquette for online class, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I just want to read over these and then I just kind of share some thoughts. But it's like, please show up on time at the scheduled time. Find a quiet place, free from distractions, siblings, pets, parents, television. Maintain respect.
Maintain respect in
both speaking, writing, and appearance. Stay on mute. Please click the raise hand button if you would like to contribute. Video needs to remain on to promote focus. Eye contact should be maintained. Refrain from chewing gum, eating, or drinking in front of the camera. Remember, this is a class. So treat it as. They're trying to colonize your house now. They're trying to colonize your house. They are literally coming in and they're like, this is how you have to live in here.
That is so true.
You actually have a point where you can provide a decent amount of educational freedom. What if the student isn't looking at you, right?
Yeah.
What if they're doing something else? What if they're, you know, I don't know. But, and then there's all these thoughts about like how we show up as teachers, right? Because that's a big thing. How are you showing up?
Oh, man. And I told you about it. I was in this crazy Zoom conversation over the weekend, and you know, it was a collection of school leaders of color, which should be dope, but most of it was a technical and clinical and bureaucratic approach to continuing the system going. There was no meaningful interrogation of what is it that is actually preventing this access, you know? So it's incredible. I love what you just said about them trying to colonize your house. Like, it's not enough to colonize children in these buildings, but now we are going to come into your home and we're going to tell you how to behave.
Class rules, they're like the least culturally responsive thing I have ever seen in education. I've seen a lot of culturally responsive or non-culturally responsive garbage. But go ahead. What were you saying?
Yeah. I'm just saying it's just a replication of the existing system, which, you know, so social media, teacher social media is going in a couple of different directions with this. I should say educator social media. A lot of educators are looking for ways to continue the system as it is constructed through digital means. And then there's a few of us who are saying, you know, maybe. And to our boy Randall, maybe there's a new way to be doing things. Maybe this is the opportunity to.
I can't stress it enough, and I think it's obvious if we think about what the inherent problems and challenges to really implementing effective remote learning are. They are rooted in a lack of culturally responsiveness, and what is being rolled out is not culturally responsive. It's intended to kind of continue and. And even though, like in our district, I've heard our, you know, superintendent make some statements, and some it's not clear. There's no clear statement that's like, yo, this should really be about getting our kids the biggest opportunity. The biggest thing that they're missing out about learning right now is socialization, being able to look at each other, to read each other's, communicate, share ideas, right? So we need to just develop processes for that. Right. To talk about.
And what you just said.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead, man. My bad. We got this ringer lag. So, you know, so we can't talk over each other like we usually do. But I think to your point about the socialization aspect, what has the digital world done to our ability to interact with each other? What has the digital world done to our feelings of empathy for those who disagree with this? It has not strengthened our ability to empathize and be closer as a community. And so when I think about how do we teach young people to empathize, to be around other folks, to just have to handle a situation where people aren't like you, when it's all going to be through this platform. And I think to your point, there is that a big need for a social connection. So as I kind of look at some of the issues that have come up, I want to shout out Monique Stewart, who follows us on Twitter, who's been raising this point of IEPs and our students with special needs and the ones who really like they have these federally mandated plans, these legal plans where there's a question of whether their needs can be met through social distancing. and remote learning. And so it's an interesting thing. And the superintendent of Aurora Public Schools was asked this question, and he's like, well, at the end of the day, we don't know whether or not what we're doing is going to work. That is not acceptable. If we're going to continue with school, like, you and I have never been able to say, yeah, I'm doing this thing. I don't know if it's going to work, but we're just doing it, you know, just see what happens. You know, we've never been able to say that with the students that we have. Why is it becoming okay to just kind of punt on the rest of the semester?
You know, again, I think they are operating on this idea that something is better than nothing, you know. And again, and I haven't, as a parent, I'd like to see something to keep my kids educated. But some of that becomes my responsibility. Yeah. How that looks is up to me. And again, I think it's assuming that there's some sort of deficiency at the house that won't allow for education, some sort of education organization process to continue. And even if it doesn't, I don't know if it's the end of the world, right? Is it that they fear that there's going to be some sort of lack of growth that would be harmful? I can't imagine, but I mean, I think they're just pushing in. And I think part of it too is the group think, bro. You know, it's like everybody's, this is what they're doing in Washington. So we're going to do it here in Colorado. Yeah. And if they do it in Colorado, then we're going to do it in Georgia. And if they do it in Georgia, we're going to do it in New York. And it's just not to say we shouldn't, but.
And you made a point a second ago. My bad. You made a point a second ago where you said that there's a political impetus to keep this going. We don't want to be the state that decided not to do anything academically demanding until August of the 2020-2021 school year, right? So, I mean, I think there's also that aspect of it where, like, to your point, this idea of groupthink and peer pressure, like, we're not doing what's right for kids in the localities that we're in. We're doing what's right for our political,
capital, I mean, also, right? You're going to have a lot of evidence because I'm sure there's going to be different school districts, different states to handle it in different ways, right? So what would happen if you – so anticipating, and like, again, I'm not a politician, but sometimes I catch myself thinking like one every once in a while.
Thank God.
But if I was a leader of a school district or a community, I might suggest this idea. What if we were to pause the school year right now or end it early, preemptive asterisk it, and say, we're going to take all the resources we would have used. We're going to save that knowing in anticipation of maybe a little bigger gap, but also starting back in, you know, in August or a little earlier than you traditionally might start, going a little longer, maybe cutting down a couple of days off of some breaks to really push hard in the next school year, but to really make sure that we tackle this and that kids are given equitable access, or if they are required to be in school, that they can equitably access it, right? So if you're going to make me be in school, make sure I can be in school. Because I know all my kids who didn't necessarily love it and have it be their favorite place in the world, they still showed up consistently, right? And so for this is going to be
like every day,
because I don't know what I'm showing up for on the internet. I can't feel like it connects. Distance and remote learning works for adults in my research. It tends to work for adults more than kids because adults know what they're working for. They have a reason why they want to stay engaged. Kids don't always know. That's
right. And they're
usually
paying for it.
Kids are not sure as to why they're staying engaged in the process. And to be honest, because, you know, part of my master's, I'm not flexing on people, but part of my master's degree is in emerging educational technologies. All the research shows that the best LMSs are like games for kids. They are like games. That's what keeps them engaged. So you want it to be like Minecraft. And ain't nobody you can do, put all the videos you want, all the discussion threads you want, all this stuff. But if you aren't making it that engaging for all kids, you're not going to capture all. You're only going to be, and it doesn't surprise me, you know, you have the 13 out of the 45. I was, you know, at first I was kicking myself. I was like, I should reach out to my middle schoolers or they haven't responded. And I was like, wait, they're eighth graders and they read the email. that said, this is extended spring break till April 7th. And I think most of them understand that. A couple have reached out, whereas you might have said you've had 13 of the 45 AP. I probably had about, when I think about my students, I probably had about 4 or 5 out of 116. And that's just emailing, stay up to date on stuff that they were already working on. And of course, you know, there are my kids who have, motivated parents who want them focused in learning. But again, I think
And who have the resources?
I think about, how can we make sure that it's accessible and how can we make it real? Have your kids do interviews of, use their phones to do interviews of folks in their neighborhood about what it's like to live through the coronavirus. Create oral histories, right? Those can be real, authentic.
Yeah. Yep. Track the data. Look at the data that's coming out every day. Understand the statistics. Understand the science behind it. Like, there's a lot of ways to work around this.
So Cuomo has many problematic aspects to him. And I think what we are seeing in people praising Cuomo, and I have to distinguish this in my own mind, I think it's praising leadership versus praising policy, right? So I can be very critical of his policy, but in these moments of leadership, he's demonstrating a great deal of leadership. But I saw him, and so just thinking about projects for kids that you could put up and not hold them accountable, just give them ideas of ways that they can learn. They don't have to turn this in. They can document it if they want. They can camera it. They can take notes if they want. They don't have to take notes, but it's an idea. Have them work on innovating a ventilator, right? Because you saw that one that Cuomo had. It was like a football.
Yeah.
Right, with a bag attached to the – I was like, man, I bet – all of my creative thinker, tinker kids, the kids who are the take-it-apart kids, they'd be thriving on that, coming up with innovations, right? So
– yeah.
But I think
– yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
I just think we were moving in a better direction when the district was like, here's ideas or resources that we can put out there that don't require a lot. But I think when you move into saying schools required, it's going to become real challenging. And I think my fear is that the kids who were like, we already had a lot of students who were having some struggles academically. Those struggles will just continue for those kids this year because teachers don't understand.
Yeah, I think you're right. And
go ahead.
Yeah, you made a point early on to where you talked about how a lot of the access issues that our students are experiencing have to do with systemic issues, have to do with the fact that not everybody has high speed internet in this country, that not everybody has access to healthcare in this country, that not everybody has a way to delay their rent or to even pay their rent in the first place. And so there's all these systemic issues. And it kind of makes me think that this is just a redux of everything else that's wrong in education, is that there are systemic realities that aren't being dealt with. So I would say that these are some things everybody needs to be thinking about. And we don't run numb but our mouths, right?
Hold on, and I just want to add something, because you were saying, that it's just, it happens this way. Like, it's why, like, we were talking about Naomi Klein and all of her talk about disaster capitalism and what's happening and how people are trying to really make money off of this, and who is remote learning going to benefit the most? Remote learning is going to benefit Google. Remote learning is going to benefit Comcast. It's going to benefit, all the tech companies, the phone companies. It's never going to benefit the people. And so they'd love to make that switch, especially right now, to keep the economy going. Because how many districts sent in big orders of Chromebooks in Irvine, California?
Yep. 100%. So we hope we gave you something to think about in this quick emergency episode of Two Dope Teachers and a Mic. Get at us on social media at Instagram and Twitter at Two Dope Teachers, Facebook.com/Two Dope Teachers. You can email us twodopeteachers@gmail.com.
Kevin,
I'm Gerardo Munoz. And in this time of remote learning, we want you to stay critical, but also to stay dope.